Good morning. Welcome to Encounter Church. I'm so glad that you are here today. If it's your first time, my name is Chris Causey. I'm the lead pastor, and we're in the middle of a series called Fill in the Blank, and it's really been around this tendency that we have to jump to conclusions, to kind of make assumptions, and just the danger that that kind of poses for the course of a life. If we want to see a life filled with better decisions and fewer regrets, that I would argue that we have to deal with what happens upstairs in our head. In fact, I came across a funny story about a doctor and a patient. There was a patient who was absolutely convinced that they were, in fact, dead. And no amount of medical teams could kind of convince this patient that they were, in fact, living. And so one of the senior doctors on the team came up with the idea to bring him in and say, hey, question for you, do dead people bleed? And the patient kind of leaned back and was like, well, no, because if you're dead, there's no functions, heart's not beating. And so the doctor pulled out a needle and pricked his finger. But blood kind of began to kind of pull up. And the patient stared at it and was looking, and eyes was getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and finally looked straight at the doctor and said, oh my goodness, dead people bleed. And the doctor was like, I have failed completely. And it was a funny story when I was reading through it. I was like, oh, that's hilarious. But I was like, oh, that captures the power of our thought life. That captures the challenges that we often face with this kind of invisible director, narrator in our mind. And last week, I wanted to, it's kind of kicked off this conversation to say, hey, one of the most powerful forces in your life is unseen, and it's your thought life. It has the power to shape your parenting, your marriage. It has the power to shape your finances. It has the power to shape everything, because it is the lens for how you move and walk through the world. Craig Rochelle is a pastor of a pretty large church in Oklahoma and kind of scattered throughout the U.S. Wrote a really good book a couple years ago called Winning the Battle in Your Mind. And he has this statement that I think is succinctly so strong. It says, your life is moving in the direction of your strongest thoughts. Which is one of those things where if you sit and you kind of reflect and you kind of unpack it a little bit, you realize that the strongest thoughts that you have, that I have, the strongest thoughts I have when I think about my wife, my kids, my job, my purpose, the strongest thoughts I have when I think about just life in general, those aren't just merely thoughts. Those are tracks that I'm moving down. That's a future that I'm moving towards. And that for many of us, we're a lot like that patient in the story, in that we are trapped in our own mind, convinced of things that were said to you or said about you, maybe by someone who you loved or maybe by you yourself. And that those strongest thoughts ultimately will shape and determine the course of your life. This is why it matters. This is why last week I said, hey, we need to be cognizant of what we're saying to ourselves, because what we say about ourselves will eventually be where we end up with ourselves. And so I want to kind of break this into a two-week conversation where I want to deal with the strongest thoughts this week. And then next week, I want to kind of unpack general thought life, because this has the power to release you or to crush you. And then the way I kicked off the conversation last week and around this fill in the blank with ourselves was with the story of a man named Gideon. And Gideon was an individual who lived almost 3,000 years ago, and then as we kind of walk through this period of Judges was an incredibly dark, intense, scary season in Israel's history. There was no functioning government. It was every man, every woman, every tribe for themselves. And not only was it kind of, it was just you and your family, and it kind of the last of us kind of vibe, you know, where it's just like, man, we got to survive this thing. That it was actually a thing that you had to survive. In this context, it was the people called the Midianites who lived around you. And they had what was the equivalent of the, like, desert F 18s, it was the camel, right? The original desert tank that could travel through a desert with supplies. And while you're sleeping at night, a whole horde of an army that could have never walked on foot could now be at your door. And by the way, there wasn't locks on doors back then either. So it was terrifying. And this is where they are. The Midianites have completely kind of crushed them. And Gideon is in a wine press threshing wheat, which is like the most inefficient, terrifying thing ever. And God shows up in this supernatural way and says, "Hey, Gideon, the Lord is with you, mighty warrior." And if we could kind of like step into a time machine and see Gideon, there is nothing mighty warrior about him. He's like he would have looked like a middle school kid who hadn't been fed in 3 weeks. I mean, all bone and skin, no meat at all. He's just kind of thin and frail and small because of the lack of access to food, because of the Midianite pressure. There was nothing about that dude that looked like mighty or warrior. The wind could have blown, and he would not have made it. And yet God comes into his life and speaks this title over him. And Gideon says, okay. And God says, "Hey, so go in the strength you have and save Israel out of Midian's hands. Am I not sending you?" And he's like, pardon me, my Lord. like I don't know how UPS works in heaven, but I think this package was intended for someone else. Like, this mission has totally been misdelivered. Because he says, how can I do it? My clan is the weakest, and I am the least in my family. Like, he's like, I am the weakest, most chicken-livered you could be in my entire family. Like, God, you've missed where you were supposed to go. And that we talked about just this whole unpacking this story and how God steps in. But what God's trying to do is create a tension for him. And it's the tension that I think is the starting point if you and I are going to begin to move in and transform our thought life. And it's the first thing that we have to do is tune into our thought life. Most of us walk blissfully through life. And because the voice in our head sounds like us, we just kind of ignore it and accept it. Right? I mean, it would be so much easier to tune into the voice in your head if the voice in your head was like a sixth grade Valley Girl. Right? Or if it sounded like Gollum. Right? I mean, it would be so much easier to turn in and tune into that, but it's not. It's your voice, the one you've heard since the very first moment that you could think. And so it just sits there running. You don't question it. It just flows through. Well, this is who I am. I was never the smart one. I was never the fast one. Well, you know, it is what it is. There's the haves and the have-nots. I'm just a have-not. I'm a loser. That's what I was always told growing up. That's true. That's who I am. We get these words inside of us, and these words start to define us. And we never even stop to realize that those are not words, they're labels. And that they can be peeled off. But we just accept them. Because we've accepted them. We're like, yeah, that's right. And we find stories that reinforce it. We find moments that confirm it. And we go about our day constantly seeing in the mirror of life a confirmation, yep, this is all I am, this is all I will ever be. And we're no more different than the man in the beginning of this message who told the doctor, wow, dead people can bleed. Because even when we have moments, we don't believe them. Even when those moments contradict what we believe, we just figure out a way. And if we begin to tune in, right, like, I'm convinced that you and I will continue to lose the control. We will lose the battle with the lies that are in our mind unless we start getting intentional about labeling them. One of the most powerful things that ever happened to me was for me to stick a label on this undertone, this under-narrative that had constantly filled my entire life. When I would be in a moment and I'd feel myself kind of like crushed by a comment or completely dejected by a situation that I was in. And I didn't, on the surface, there was no pattern at all. And some days are good, but then that one conversation, that one word from that one person, the one statement that my wife made, that she didn't intend to land hard, but it hit like a nuclear weapon. When you start to tune in, you begin to notice there's patterns to those things. And that for me, I think visually, and so the iceberg analogy when I was working through this in my life was really helpful. Because it gave me a way to have like a thought audit. Because for most of us, it's easier to identify behaviors that we don't like about ourselves. It's easier to identify behaviors. Because when we've all been in a place where we're like, oh, I should probably change, you know, change your mind, change your life. Like if all you had to do was buy a book to change your mind, we could do that instantly because they are everywhere. But it's not easy. And part of it is because it's really hard to think about your thoughts. I mean, just saying that sentence out loud sounds exhausting because so many of us are already exhausted by our thoughts, the worries, the anxieties, the what ifs, the what could be's. And I think a great starting point, one that was super helpful for me, was to start with my behaviors and say, what is it, what are the moments that I just walk away being like, that, I hate that. I hate who I was then. Or that moment destroyed me. Why? And it's not just your actions. I think reactions might actually be more helpful than your actual actions. When I've talked about us walking through our struggle with infertility, and oh my goodness, I will never forget the day that like the doctor looked at us and was like, hey, Chris, it's your fault. They didn't say it that way. They didn't say, hey, Chris, you're the reason your wife can't be happy and have a second child. Oh, by the way, because you weren't supposed to have the first one either. Like, they didn't say it that way. But I remember walking out of the doctor's office. I mean, I still drive by it sometimes, and the emotion punches me in the face. Because there was a parking garage underneath it, and I remember standing across from my wife just crying, being like, I'm so sorry. I can't give you what you want. And just going and sitting in my car and crying. And I was like, what is going on inside of me right now? And then I'd go to another moment in life and a conversation and someone's, you know, you didn't measure up this way, Chris. And I'm like, what's going on? Why did that hurt so bad? And for me, one of the best things that happened in this process was that what I started to notice a pattern in the behaviors, my reactions, that actually, if I did the work, which I did, helped me to uncover some beliefs that were underneath the surface. And beliefs are tricky because they do. They live underneath the surface. A long time ago, you put them in a lockbox, you deposit them, and you haven't thought about them since. But your behaviors still reveal them. And for me, what it was for me was I'm not enough. Intense seasons of work, when it's those weeks or those months where it is like 60, kind of 70 hours that I'm putting in to make something happen. And it's like, I see the failure still organizationally, and I know I feel the weight of failing in every, I mean, I just feel like a failure because I feel like I'm not enough for my family because I'm trying to give everything I can for this to work because I need this to work for this to work, and I'm trying everything I can do to make this work, and I just feel like I'm failing because I'm failing over here. And then I go over here, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to do it right over here, and then this thing starts to fail because I'm not giving it the time, and it's just like, I'm not enough. I'm not enough. And maybe I'm the only one who's ever dealt with that. But for me, that was my struggle. That was this driving, demanding, crushing belief in my life. I'm not enough. And until I tuned into it, it continued to completely turn my life upside down. But the beauty of what God does is when we start to say, God, I want help in my thought life, is he will do for us what he does and what he did for Gideon. Because after you tune into it, it is the hardest moment because you're finally facing the demon. You're finally facing the giant, and it's terrifying because you're like, how do I kill this thing? I mean, this is decades of me working really hard to make sure I was really good at believing that lie. How do I change that? And the story picks up. He says, that same night, the Lord said to him, take the second bull from your father's herd, the one 7 years old, tear down your father's altar to Baal, and cut down the Asherah pole beside it. Then build a proper kind of altar to the Lord, your God, on top of this height. This is, like I said, thousands of years culturally removed. But Israel at the time is in the middle of a severe famine because of the war. And like people in desperate times, they turn to desperate things. They turn to things for escape. They turn to things that give them a sense of control. So in fact, it's not that distant from what we do. It may not be a pole to Baal or an Asherah pole, but it may be alcohol or drugs, social media, conspiracy theories. I mean, this week, one of the books that was climbing on Amazon's kind of top-selling list was a book that was completely unnamed. But because of the date that it was going to be released on, and because if you added up the numbers of the birthday and the release day and the description, it totaled up to number 13. And I know what you are already thinking. 13 is Taylor Swift's favorite number. This is clearly Taylor Swift's book that she hasn't told anyone that's about to be released. And this is a whole internet thing happened. I mean, this book was the number 2 top-selling book on Amazon with no name, where people were like, it is Taylor's biography. She did it. And then it turned out it was a Korean pop band, so it went to 1. Okay, so it was like, boom. But they had to come out and say, hey, this isn't about Taylor Swift. Quit buying our book. Because you're going to be really disappointed if you go to open it and it's a Korean pop band. And turns out that was actually even more popular than Taylor Swift. So it just completely top 1. But what happens is like we grab hold of things that give us control. We want to make meaning so that we don't feel like life has no meaning. I mean, there's a reason conspiracy theories exploded during the pandemic. Because that was, in our lifetime, it has been that one moment that stands out where all of us collectively, regardless of socioeconomics, regardless of where you live, regardless of what your degree and pedigree was, all of us instantaneously had no control. And so this is what they do. They build idols and altars. And these gods, Baal and Asherah, they're the gods of fertility. They're the gods that if you worship them, they'll make sure that your goats and your cows have offspring. They're the ones who are going to make sure your crops grow. Because remember, you're in a famine. You need food. There's not modern agriculture like the way it is now. And so it's so superstitious. They're like, let's turn to these things because that'll make our crops grow. And then God says to Gideon, go tear those things down because they're worshiping false gods. And I want you to build an altar to me because Israel was a nation that was founded on their belief and commitment to God. And it says that Gideon says, okay. So Gideon took 10 of his servants and did as the Lord told him, but because he was afraid of his family and the townspeople, he did it at night rather than in the daytime. Because Gideon does this at night because he recognizes that to tear down, I mean, I don't know about this. I don't know what you do as a hobby. I doubt many of you do this as a hobby, but if you ever really just want to stir up and have an invigorating hobby, challenge people who are conspiracy theorists online. Just do that, you know, make that your kind of like your side hobby. What do you do? I like to find people who believe the earth is flat and start challenging them and buy them rocket tickets, right? Like, you know, this like doesn't work out very well. Because when you start to mess with what people cling to for their sense of control, it can get very out of control quickly. This is what Gideon understands. Everybody is terrified, and the only reason they're not completely losing their mind is they believe these two statues are going to be the reason the crops are going to grow this year and they're going to have something to eat. So he destroys them at night. And it's really easy when to look at this story and to know that Gideon had self-confessed he's the biggest chicken of all the chickens in the country. The biggest coward of all. Well, of course, look what he's doing. He's being a coward. But we can miss what's actually happening, which is even more exciting, which is, yes, he's being a coward, but he's not the same coward he was. The coward he was the coward in the wine press, making sure no one's looking, kind of kicking up the wheat, instead of actually threshing wheat on a threshing floor at the top of a hill for everyone to see. No, he's actually a coward who's over here now, because his actions has changed, even though his emotions have not. And I think for many of us, where the book and the desire to change our thinking, to change our life, where we hit the brick wall oftentimes is in this moment when we go to try. I mean, I remember one time working through, and somebody was trying to explain meditation to me. And they're like, okay, so what you do is you're going to get down in a position. And I'm like, I don't think my legs bend that way. And they're like, trust me, it does. Okay, I got you. They're like, you're going to breathe deeply, and you're going to empty your mind. And you're not going to think about anything. And I'm like, emptying my mind. Man, my back kind of hurts. I don't know if my knees really are as flexible as they used to be. Oh, no, that's right. I'm emptying my mind. I'm not thinking about a thing right now. Wait a second. Is not thinking about not thinking about a thing, thinking about a thing. Man, my knee really hurt. Oh, that's right, not thinking. I mean, like I tried it and I was like, not thinking doesn't work. I'm like, I'm pretty sure even when I'm sleeping, I'm still thinking. Like, I think me not thinking is called dead, which would be a really bad outcome for this opportunity that you're giving me to have peace right now. Right? It's a, because trying to not think about a pink elephant, not think about a pink elephant, you got a pink elephant dancing in your head. Like, that's just how it works. And so what God does with Gideon that is genius is something that you and I can do as our first starting point in transforming our mind. It's something that I do in parenting a lot. This is my daughter. I love her. Her name is Ella. She's an 11-year-old little girl. We were on a vacation, and kind of like vacations where you're driving around, you don't know the area. Sometimes you kind of stumble into things that are like, oh, that's different, that's neat. And because we had some downtime, we're like, let's go to that place. It was a state park. And it turns out it was a state park that had the largest sand dunes on the East Coast. Now, I have a 3-year-old whose stated life passion is dirt, right? I mean, that's like digging in it. He saw it, he fell back and made sand angels. I mean, it was like magical for him, okay? But the thing that this place specifically was famous for was you could like sand surf, okay? Which is another way of saying getting injured and being unable to walk to your car to go to the hospital. But it's too sandy to airlift you out, right? And so naturally, we're all going to go do this because this sounds like a wonderful idea. And so we rent sand surfboards. And my daughter gets up on this huge hill and just, boom, and she's like doing it. And it is awesome. My wife gets up and she's like, boom, you know. And I get up and I look like a National Geographic baby giraffe special. And I don't so much do it, but I still tried it. But what was fascinating is I'm watching her fly down this hill on the sand surfboard, and my mind jumps back to when she was 4 or 5 and she would see gypsy caterpillars. I don't know if you remember those. They're like if Star Wars and Satan spawned like an enemy insect, it would be something like a gypsy caterpillar. They're the caterpillars that have the spikes sticking out of them that are poisonous, that are everywhere, and it's just like, for whatever reason, her brain fixated on gypsy caterpillars, okay? Something you've probably never thought about. She thought about a lot. And we were at a park one day, and she saw a gypsy caterpillar nest in a tree. Like, they're just kind of up there. And she freaked out and demanded to go home. And that moment stood out for her. Because she was like, I'm so afraid. I'm such a fearful. I'm like a chicken, Dad. I'm like so scared. And one of the things that we would intentionally talk to her about through, because we went through that, you know, from gypsy caterpillars to spiders to going to lunch and dealing with that friend to, I mean, just kind of walking through the full gamut as she's gotten older. And one of the things that's been really helpful for her and kind of watching her go down and soar, and I mean, she's like an adrenaline junkie now, but the way that we did it was not to argue with her thoughts. It was to point out her actions that contradicted her thoughts. I'm a chicken. No, you're not. Girl, remember when you and me rode that roller coaster that went upside down? Chickens don't do that. Cowards don't ride upside down roller coasters. And what's happened slowly is because she's done these actions, she started to gain traction in transforming her thoughts. Because it's really hard to believe you're a failure when you win. It's really hard to believe you can't say no when you say no. It's really hard to say, man, I can't really run when you're on a treadmill and you just crossed 4 miles with no dog or person with a knife chasing you behind you. Right? Like, you're like, wait a second. I'm doing this thing. My brain doesn't realize it, but my body does. And God has Gideon take a very first small step, tear down this altar, because he recognizes that doing the action of a mighty warrior trumps the feelings of being a coward. And if there is a strongest thought in your life, if there's some controlling thoughts in your life, you'd be surprised that just the simple action that is the opposite of that thought oftentimes can cause you to gain so much more ground than trying to outthink that thought. People, I'm not generous. Just do something. Give to something. Serve someone. I'm not grateful. That's fine. You're not a very grateful, thankful person. Start a gratitude journal just this week. Write down 3 things every single day. You don't have to be grateful. Just do that. Because when our bodies start to do the actions, our brains start to catch up. And God, in his genius, thousands of years before any brilliant psychologist or self-help coach provided breakthrough on YouTube for you, God had already put that in the manual for how we can transform our thoughts. And I use this as kind of a Jedi mind trick with my kids all the time. Because I realize if I can get them to do something that's the opposite of what they keep thinking they are, then they have to argue with themselves, not me. And that's just a whole lot less exhausting for me. But it's also far more convincing for them, because you don't win arguments with yourself when you're doing the opposite of what you think you are. And so, but this action thing is something that God's doing, because he's trying to fill in the blank for Gideon with this mighty warrior. So he continues, he says, okay, Gideon, fast forward in the story, I want you to go down, and now is the moment. I've told you, I've picked you to free Israel from the kind of the threshold and the scary scourge of the Midianites. And now the armies are here. They've arrived. And it says, now the camp of Midian lay below him in the valley. And during that night, the Lord said to Gideon, get up, go down against the camp. Gideon's biggest fear is now here. Remember, he was threshing wheat in the wine press because he did not want to encounter a Midianite, because he was afraid. And now God is waking him up to say, hey, the enemy has actually come in to destroy you. I've got a great idea. I want you to go sneak into their camp. And that we find out that the Midianites, the Amalekites, and all the other eastern peoples had settled in the valley. That's a really random thought. I don't know why, but my brain does this, and I've got to say it to move. Well, sometimes when I'm reading things like this, I'm like, that would be a great name for a band, right? Like, the Eastern Peoples, I think, would be a really interesting, like, folk band. I don't, anyways. Okay, so, like, my brain does that, and I just, now it's over there, and I can move on. I'll let you ponder that. I do that with my daughter all the time. We ride by, and I'll see a store name, and I'm like, actually, that would be a really fascinating punk band name. And she's like, what just happened? And I'm like, nothing. Let's just keep going. All right, so, and all the other Eastern Peoples had settled in the valley. So, what's crazy is not just the Midianites. He's already afraid of them. Turns out the Midianites have gone around and built a posse. They've gone to Amalekites and said, hey, you want to help us get rid of the Israelites? And they're like, yeah, we don't like them either. And it's not just the Amalekites, it's all the other Eastern peoples. So the Midianites literally turned the whole region against Israel. I mean, it would be the equivalent of pick a small town, USA, and then decide that the U.S. military decides that's foreign, like, adversaries. I mean, that this is the scale of the lopsidedness of the battle. I grew up in a really, really rural small town, super poor, 5,000 people, right? And if the U.S. military ever landed and decided we were an enemy, we wouldn't have lasted, right? And so you can see it, right? Thick as locusts. By the way, this is locusts. That's how thick they are, right? I mean, back in 1875, when the worst locust plague in documented history happened in the middle part of the U.S., right, for 5 days straight, like this mile wide of locusts just streamed above head. I mean, thick as locusts. So you can kind of go back to this passage, right? Thick as locusts. And they're camels. Remember, think when you hear camels thousands of years ago, in their mind, they're not camels. They're the equivalent of F-16s, F-18s, and tanks. So you're standing, you come over the hill and look into the valley, and there before you is fire torches everywhere, the sound of camels. I mean, it's the equivalent of like jet engines on airplanes, like, right? I mean, you're like, and Gideon's looking over that. It is terrifying. And the camels could not be more counted than the sand on the seashore. I mean, this is like literally a nightmare. Like, that's a nightmare. And this is what he's staring at. He's like, what do I do? And when it says, Gideon arrived just as a man was telling a friend his dream. So Gideon creeps up. He gets behind the bushes and he's listening. And there's two guys talking. And one of them looks at the other one and says, I had a dream. A round loaf of barley bread came tumbling into the Midianite camp. Okay, now, I don't know when's the last time you had a guy conversation. This sounds exactly like my last guy conversation, right? Not really. It would be like, hey, have you ever tried that new smoker? I got this great smoker and I've been putting some beef brisket. Like, this is not a normal guy conversation today, but this is not that uncommon. They're very superstitious. They believe in the power of dreams, that the divine beings speak to them. And so he's like, man, I had this disturbing dream last night. A barley bread, which is the bread of poor people, the cheap bread, the throwaway bread, not the bread you're going to get at Wegmans or Target. This is not even like the bread you're going to get at some other kind of discount store. This is the bread at the store way, 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 way out that the factory owns, that they put the bread that didn't meet the qualifications to be sold. This is like the outlet store version of bread. Except that the label didn't get unprinted, you know, it's like the bad bread. And so he's like, this insignificant piece of bread came tumbling into the Midianite camp. And it struck the tent with such a force that the tent overturned and collapsed. So you kind of get like, barley is not really a bread that's respected back then. Now we pay a ton of money so they have, say we had barley bread. But like, this is why he's like, wait a second, barley bread is insignificant, it's weak, it's poor, it's frail, and yet it comes in and it knocks down the tent. And his friend responded, this can be nothing other than the sword of Gideon, son of Joash, the Israelite. I mean, Gideon's listening through the bushes, and he's like, what? For real? I mean, just recently he told God, God, I am like the most cowardly of the family who's known as the cowards in the tribe that is known as the coward tribe. And now my enemies are speaking fearfully of me? No. The people who used to be my nightmare, I am now their living nightmare? What? That's crazy. And what God's doing that can be applied to your life and to my life is he's showing Gideon the power of talking back to our thoughts. Because he's physically hearing, verbally, talking back to your thoughts. I said, you know, with our kids, I do this a lot where my daughter will say something and I'll be like, hey, time out. Let's hit rewind. Two things. One, I don't permit people to say lies like that to my daughter, so I need you to apologize to her. And she's like, what? And I'm like, go ahead and say, Ella, I'm sorry for the lie that I just said about you. It's not true. Like, Ella, I'm sorry for the lie I just said about you. That's not true. I'm like, that didn't sound like you meant it. I'm going to need you to say it a little bit louder. Because I want her to realize that in the same way that as her father, I'm not okay with other people saying those things about her, I'm not okay with her saying those things about her either. Some of you say things to yourselves that no one who loves you, who ever heard them, would ever be okay with what you say to yourself inside your mind. Some of you put yourself down. Some of you limit yourself so much. You say things about you that you would never say about someone else or about your children. And yet you say it about you. Because it happens up here. And there is a power in speaking and talking back to yourself. And there's especially a power when you do it out loud. Preferably when no one else is around, because if you're doing it by when people are around, they might think you're crazy. And that's another thing you have to talk to back yourself. Like, I'm not crazy, even though everybody thinks I'm crazy, because I keep talking to myself out loud in the grocery store, saying I'm a great mom or I'm an okay dad. You know. So anyways, just that's a freebie for you. But we've got to talk back to the lies that we listen to. And God has given Gideon a living demonstration of that power when he's listening to the people who were his nightmare describe him as his nightmare. He's talking back. He's starting to fill in the blanks, and this is what he does. This is how we end. It says, as they continue the conversation, the two guys talking, God has given the Midianites and the whole camp into his hands. And when Gideon heard the dream and its interpretation, he bowed down and worshiped. He returned to the camp of Israel. Still night, remember? And he runs and he calls out, get up! Wake up! The Lord has given the Midianite camp into your hands. He's like, hey guys, I just got the ding on my phone that says the package has been delivered. It's time to go pick up our victory. It's time that we go and get what God has given us, the defeat of our enemies. He wakes them up out of slumber to tell them to grab their swords. There's 300 of them, by the way. And there's a whole valley filled with an army. And he's saying, hey, God's here. See, one of the things I think is really, really powerful in the shift that Gideon makes, that you and I have to come to the same place, is when I showed you earlier the iceberg, I said there's behaviors and then there's beliefs. And it's really simple. They're called beliefs because you and I believe them. Because a lie, right? A lie accepted as truth has the same effect on our life as the facts. Right? So, Whether it's fact or fiction does not matter if you accept it and you believe it. And most of us don't think about it because it's in our voice, because our internal system is broken. We think if it's in our voice and it was easy to think, it must be true. And that is a horrible system for gauging the validity of a thought. Well, of course it's in your voice, because if it wasn't in your voice, you would either need to see a doctor or an exorcist, right? One, let's just throw that one out, because there's only one voice anything in your head is going to sound like. And then two, because of the ease of it. Now, all the ease of that thought means is that you've thought that thought enough times. There's enough myelin sheathing around those nerve cells that it just bing, flings through. No delay. Nothing slowing it down. Zoom, zoom. That's all it means. It is just a reflection of physiology that you've thought that thought enough that your brain recognizes, oh, this must be a thought they want to think. So let's make it faster. It's like driving a car. First time you drove a car, it was like, oh my goodness, what am I doing? And now you and I can go hundreds of miles. You're on a road trip and you're like, I just went 100 miles and I don't remember anything. I really hope I don't see news about someone getting hit, right? Because you're like, where did my brain go? Because you've just been driving. That's what happens in our thought life too. You think it enough times, it just zooms through. But that's not the test. The test should be the substance and the source. Is it true? And where did it come from? Because ultimately, what makes a belief is that you trust it. And so if you believe I will never be enough, it's really just me trusting that what people have said about me, when my father walked out before I was born, and that was the narrative that I put inside of me, that I wasn't enough to keep him around, right? Or sitting across from the doctor and I'm not enough for our family to grow. I'm putting trust in what's been said about me. That's all that is. And what God invites Gideon into is to say, stop trusting in the circumstances around you. Stop trusting in the enemy that surrounds you. Gideon, start trusting in me. The Lord has given the Midianite camp into your hands. It's about the trust of the truth. Who God is, and what he said. Now let's get personal. Because remember, it was just a little while ago that Gideon was so terrified, so afraid, so trapped and bound in his thought life that he could not even imagine seeing an enemy at the distance. And now, he's mounting a force of 300 people to crush an army of thousands, if not tens of thousands of people. Because his trust has shifted. Because he's discovered a God. The God of the yet. There's this album that dropped Friday that there's this one line in it I've just been singing. It's like, you're not done with me yet. I'm like, oh, I like that. It's like, you're not done with me yet. And I'm like, oh, God, you're not done with me yet. Yet's a good word. Yet is not a word that gets enough love in my life. Because God comes over Gideon, who is sitting there terrified, completely wrapped in fear. And he's like, have you seen the enemy? Have you seen, God, what they've done to us and what they can do to us? There is no victory. And God's like, there's no victory yet. Yet. Right? Mighty warrior. Yet. So just this week, I've been driving around like, you're not done with me yet. I'm like, oh, yeah. Yet is one of those words, just as a thought, talk back thing. where sometimes, like, let's say you're feeling frustrated and you're like, I get so angry and I can't seem to control myself yet. I just can't seem to get my responses to my wife right, or the conversations and communication with my kids so they understand how much I love them and just how I want the best for them. Yet, it's just, it does something. It's not just a thought hack. It's that we serve the God of the yet. He's like, yeah, Gideon, you thrash that little stuff all you want because I'm going to open up victory. So one day you're going to be on that threshing floor and you guys are going to look like Lord of the Dance up there doing that thing, threshing that wheat, because I'm the God of the yet. And what if over your thought life in your life, yet was spoken? Over your marriage, over your career, yet was what you started to sing to yourself. There's so much more to discover. He's not done with me yet. God's invitation to Gideon and to you, demonstrated on the cross and exclamated through the resurrection of an empty tomb, was he's not done with you yet. No matter what you've done, no matter what's been done to you, he's not done with you yet. That the blank that he wants to fill in your life and in your mind is yet. And next week, we're going to come back. We're going to circle that bigger thought pattern of our general thought life. But this week, it's about saying, okay, Jesus, this is the strongest stronghold in my mind. This is the biggest lie that I've believed. Would you, Jesus, turn it into a yet? And I believe that he will and that he can. And so today, the way we want to close out, and I want to pray over, because for some of us, man, like we carry around the chains, and the shackles don't reverberate in other people's minds, but they do in ours. The anxiety, the desire for control, worry, the lack of self-control and discipline, the way we blow up, the way we react. All those things, they restrain us. And we look jealous at other people's lives and what they're doing and what they're experiencing, and we just eventually start to wave this white flag because our chains just can't come up. And the way we wanted to close out today, because ultimately what you need from me is what I can't give you, but it's what I can give you is the God who can, is to break the chains. I've given you a path that he made clear for us in his word. But ultimately, what you need is him. And maybe for some of you, the first thing that you need to break, the first lie that you need to shift, is maybe who you think about God, what you think about God, and who Jesus is. For some of you, it may be the stronghold that's been the declaration banner of your entire life. You have not stepped into professional careers. You have not spoken up. You have not stepped on the platforms that you should have. You have not led in ways that you could have because you believe the whispers that still echo in your mind a long time ago that someone said about you, or that you started saying about yourself. And today that song is just a song called Nothing Else, and it's really like that our first, truest, most powerful anchor is to trust the truth, who he is, what he's done, and what he says. Let's pray. God, thank you. Thank you that you're a God who is not done with us. That no matter who we are, no matter what we've done, that because of your Son, Jesus, that there's hope, there's life, there's forgiveness, there's grace, there's joy, there's peace, that there's chains that can be broken. And I pray that in the final minutes of the service, God, that you would meet us in this song, that you would speak to us through the words of this song, your words, your freedom. And thank you for the way you intentionally led Gideon from a place of being a wimp to the place of being a warrior, and that you're the same God who can do that today in our own lives. That you can move deadbeats to dads, that you can move people who are crushed by debt to people who are walking in generosity, people who've been controlled by anger to being controlled by peace. That you're the God of the yet. So thank you in advance for what you're yet about to do. And it's in your name, Jesus, I pray. Amen. So I want to thank you for being here today. And,